And those lived experiences, those different perspectives are the key ingredients there for innovation and creativity to happen, and also a platform for robust conversation to happen as well.
Are you interested in regenerative economy? What do you think about best practice versus next practice? How can we properly preserve urban cultures? Stay tuned for answers from Pearl Niang.
What is the future for cities? Do you want to learn more about them? Do you want to know how others think about them? Do you want to be part of the conversation? Then this is the right place.
Welcome to What is the Future for Cities podcast. Today, I will interview Pearl Niang, Head of Smart City, Innovation and Improvement and City of Casey. We will talk about her vision for the future of cities, urban collaboration, good intentions, equal opportunities, and many more. So let's start with a proper introduction. Pearl Niang is an experienced consultant committed to drive digital innovation through research, community engagement, and professional development activities. Her mission is to be a catalyst for positive change by creating an enduring legacy, inspiring others to unleash their full potential, championing women in STEM, and using innovative strategy to shape our future cities. And with that, Pearl, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for your time. I highly appreciate your appearance on the podcast. Let's jump right in. What does the future of cities mean to you?
I think I wish in future, my city is going to be like my best friend, where it offers me that space to feel like there's a sense of belonging and also giving me that space to be my best self. So if I think about the future of the city, three keywords actually came into my mind. One is inclusive, sustainable, and also smart. To me, inclusive means that nobody should be left behind. So it really doesn't matter where we came from or who we are. I believe that we should all have equal access to any services that can help us to make our life better and also having meaningful work as well. And when I talk about meaningful work here, I don't mean just go out and get a job and put a food on table, things like that. Meaningful work to me comes with like fair income, making sure that we feel safe at work and also engaging us, giving us that sense of contribution and purpose as well. And for me, as someone who, I call myself a global citizen here, as someone who have lived in different countries, be it as an international student or an expat working in different countries, I feel like places where I really thrive and can be my best self is where the city actually fosters inclusivity. So when I came to Melbourne many years ago as an international student, I feel like there are a lot of activities and the infrastructures are also well developed to support me moving from point A to point B. So I think that helps to reduce my fear there when I first came over as an international student. So to me, inclusivity is probably one of the important elements here on the future of cities. The other one that I briefly spoke about is sustainability as well. A lot of times we think about sustainability as preserving our planet, about greens. But I think that's also an important element there on sustaining our culture for our future generations as well. And today we also hear a lot on circular economy, where we minimize waste, maximize resources. And I think the future here is on regenerative economy, where we not only just sustain them, but we also restore and revitalize our resources, especially after all the developments that we have in the last centuries or so. I think the last one was smart. And this is one of the very closest elements to my heart, because as someone who works in the smart city space, smart to me is about using the data and the technology that we have with good intention. And ultimately, it's really about serving the people that live in our community. I think to me, the future of the cities will be something that is adaptable. People come and go in a city. So I think having the city to be adaptable to the needs of the community will be something that is important. And also having the city like a best friend. So I always believe that if we take care of our city, we'll take care of us.
I had Adrian McGregor on the podcast, and he talked about how people are part of nature and how not just people are part of nature, but also cities are part of nature. And he calls this approach bio-urbanism. And your idea of the city being our best friend, for me, is just very clicked with this we can be all part of something together to make it better for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Totally. And there's always that loop and relationship over there. So what we do today is also potentially benefiting ourselves in future, and not just ourselves, but also our future generations as well.
Thank you for unpacking of what inclusion, sustainability and smartness means to you. Those are very important aspects. When you talked about sustainability, mm-hmm. you talked about how we need to transition from circular economy to regenerative economy. Mm-hmm. Do you differentiate between regenerative economy and circular economy?
I need to say that I'm not an expert in this sustainability space. From my reading is that there is a slight differentiation between circular economy and regenerative economy. So circular economy comes with you purchase something and then previously it's going to be a linear path. So it's last time it was a linear economy where we purchase something and then we use it. And once the piece of item that we purchase reach their end of life, we just chuck it. And the idea of circular economy here is we'll reuse it, recycle it, and find ways to make good use of what we have purchased that item. Whereas regenerative economy comes with not just recycle, reuse, but regenerating it. So it makes it into this cycle of continuously generating something. And we don't even need to go into the purchasing state anymore.
So you have three states basically for economy, the linear, which we try to leave behind currently, the circular, which tries to give more life cycles to the same item or the same material, and the regenerative, when we try to regenerate from the original materials to do something more.
Totally, totally. And I think you summarized that really well. So one is just a one path, and the other one is extending the life, and the third one is recreating it. It's not just finishing at one point in time. And I think Ellen MacArthur Foundation have quite a few readings on circular economy and sustainability and whatnot. And I would encourage people who want to know more about that to take a look at that, because I think the materials and the resources there will probably are able to explain that better than what I'm trying to tell here.
Thank you for the recommendation. And you described smartness or the smart city as using technology and data with good intentions. Now, this is a very interesting addition because the smart city idea can be targeted as using the data to decrease people's rights or living styles or choices. What do you mean by good intentions?
Yeah, and I think this comes with any best or good practices that we have over here is to understand what we want to use the data for before we even go into the state of capturing the data. From observation and also reading some of the different materials available, there are always conversations of capturing data and not being able to manage the data properly. So I think for us to really make good use of the data with good intention, what I'm referring here to is making sure what we want the data to inform us of, and also not having some biases on those data as well, especially the way we capture the data. To summarize, that would be understanding why we need the data and capturing the data, making sure that we have a mechanism here to make sure that it's not biased and fair to everyone.
Do you see data as useful in and of itself, or are there next steps from data? For example, Luke Housegoe in episode 12, if I'm not blanking, talked that data in and of itself is very good, but basically unusable. We need to translate it into information and then insights, and then we can talk about knowledge.
Totally. I resonate with that 100%. There's no point for us capturing multiple different types of data sets and let the data just sitting there, because the real magic actually happens when we actually take some action with those data that we have captured. So like what you mentioned earlier, using the data to tell us a story, to validate some of our hypotheses, tell us where we went right and where we went wrong, and what can we do. So a lot of times, data won't help us to drive an action. It is always our critical thinking that look at those data and see what actions can we take. So ultimately, all comes back to the execution side of things. Are we doing something besides just capturing the data? 100% agree with that statement over there.
How is the current city different from the future of the city in your vision? Is the future of the city, how you imagine it, very different from the current state of the city?
I wouldn't say that it is totally different. I think there are still certain elements that needs to be preserved. And one of the things that I think I really like, especially from a childhood perspective, going back in time, which I hope we see more today, at least for my childhood, I can share my story here. It's always very safe for us to go out and play. We spend a lot of time outdoor. Whereas today, I can't speak for everyone here. I see most of the kids are all on digital devices. To me, I won't say that the future of the city will be totally different. I do see that there will be value here for us to preserve some of the human connections. I think that's probably the most important part. Of course, I do see that there will be certain enhancement or advancement that we can see in the future of city. And I think one of the projects that really interests me, and I feel like it would be amazing if every city can do that, is NEOM in Saudi Arabia. So they are doing, I think, one of probably a very different structure of the city. From my reading, they are doing some sort of like cognitive city where the city has no cars, no roads. And to me, that is really a game changer, isn't it? Like today we move from point A to point B, primarily using car or walking, etc. In NEOM, the idea and the future there is no cars. So people would rely on autonomous vehicles and walking to move from different points. I think that is probably something that I look forward to. So I won't say that the future of city will be totally different. There will be elements like human connections and playtime that we need to preserve, but there's also advancement there that we can bake in, especially things that needs to be improved, like reducing greenhouse gases emission and also making the places safer. And I think equality is going to be something that I see important moving forward.
I asked this question because in my PhD, I interviewed 43 Melbourne-based architects, urban planners and engineers. And it was amazing to see that these creative professionals who earn their living and who are these very creative geniuses talked about improving the city in some ways, as you talked about. And it's interesting to hear. So the future of the city is not something completely new or completely different. Although in creative situations, we could jump to that idea. I'm not saying that we should. It's just we could jump to that idea. But it's interesting that obviously we live in this current city. So our thinking is rooted in the current city. And that's also interesting how that affects our perception of the future of the city.
Totally. And one of my mentors once told me that there are different types of smart cities. One is the more ad hoc type of smart city whereby you already have some legacy buildings, assets, systems, and people. And smart city or the future of the city, that is where you go with progressive small baby steps improvement every year, every day, every month. You do something better to make the city smarter. So that's more on the ad hoc approach. And the other one is probably what I said earlier on that NEOM project, which is a greenfield approach where we totally start with a blank canvas and create a new city of the future. And very rare we see that greenfield because most of the cities that we have today are probably more on the ad hoc phase because we can't totally eliminate everyone. Whereas NEOM is in a very unique position whereby they are currently utilizing a piece of land whereby there's no inhabitants, as in no human beings. So they can start from scratch. For most of the cities that we have today, I think it will be a challenge if we go with a greenfield approach.
I had Richard Morrison talking about NEOM as being part of the development. And I had Tom Bouchette talking about NEOM as an outsider who has been researching planned cities and how they haven't been working out for humans at all. They provided a very different view on NEOM because NEOM is a planned city and Tom is advocating for an organic growth because we can't divorce different functions for the city, for humans to function itself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And speaking of humans as well, in every city, our community are always changing. People come and go, and it's always important for us to just keep updating ourselves with what the needs of the community are. So it's always that process of engage and not just stop there, but re-engage and re-engage. And I think that's how we can fit the needs of the community that we serve.
It's amazing that you highlighted how the community changes the city and its future will change. That's really exciting and terrifying at the same time.
Yes, there's always challenges and opportunities as well with people movement and whatnot. And what I see more of an opportunity here when it comes to people movement, which is also a beauty, whereby you have like people from different places with all the skill sets and talent. And it is also an opportunity for the city to capture the talent and use that to help develop their own cities as well. This is also another interesting thing with all this global human mobility is that we have different perspective and different experience all coming together and sharing the ideas. For example, Fanny, your experience and mine will be 100% different. And when we move to different places, we meet people of different experiences. And those deep experiences, those different perspectives are the key ingredients there for innovation and creativity to happen. And also a platform for robust conversation to happen as well.
Okay, we will get back to the opportunities. First, let's recap. What are your three biggest fears regarding the future of cities?
I think it all goes back to the first one that I can think of and probably also very close to my heart here is on that whole piece on equity and inclusion. I'm genuinely very worried that as the city evolves and as the community changes, we might unintentionally leave certain groups of communities behind. And I shared earlier on human mobility. So our cities may not be able to equip with the rapid change in human mobility over here. We have people from different walks of life coming in and out. So as I said earlier, it's important to engage and also re-engaging them so that when new community members come in, they also feel included and have access to equal opportunities as people who have stayed there for a while. And of course, the other one, and probably I can go very long on this, is on data biases, which I also briefly touched on earlier. And it's interesting how we talk about this because lately I've been reading this book called The Invisible Women. And in that book, they highlight some of the data biases that are in some of the ways we work today. So for example, car technology in the past are designed not in favor of women. So the design and testing of some of the safety features in the past, they use like male crash test dummies and also the male body dimension as the standard. So this means that women may be at a higher chance of having an injury when there's a car accident. So that's probably one of the interesting findings that I saw in that book. And another one which I vaguely remember is on room temperature. And we could also say that air conditioning is also a form of technology in some way or another. A lot of times we notice female who are in like air conditioning room, they will be like putting layers and layers of jackets and then having scarves and whatnot. And then you see the guys not having similar reactions. And apparently, according to that book, is that guys have higher body metabolism and hence, the air conditioning or the thermostat is be at a lower temperature to accommodate for that. So that's another example that was in that book. And another one as well is also something I observe a lot these days is you always see a long queue outside of female toilet, but you don't see a long queue outside of a men's toilet, mainly because female actually spend more time in the bathroom than men. This means that when we plan out our spaces and the size of the bathroom, it's not quite okay for us to assume that the size of the male bathrooms are the same as the female ones. So I think all these different examples just made me think about how important it is to consider not just gender. While this book is primarily on gender, but I think there are also other factors that we need to consider when it comes to data collection and also any analysis here to make sure that we don't introduce any biases and also there's fairness in urban planning, the way we plan spaces and the way we use technology as well. And I think I also read something on MIT. They were doing some experiment and I think it's about exploring how people from different places will make choices when it comes to a masculine situation for autonomous vehicle. So apparently certain countries will favor like the elderly. So this is primarily in Asia, Japan, China and whatnot. And there are also countries that may favor other types of pedestrians. I thought the experiment was also quite interesting because it also tells us if we have different programmers writing those code, it may have a very different outcome.
Two questions. I will be the devil's advocate. Just coming back to this idea you just talked about, this experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Based on our culture, we put in these biases into these systems.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that from my point of view, there could be some problems, for example, prioritizing the elderly.
Mm.
But I also understand a cultural aspect, which means that maybe in that culture, it would be a shame to save the younger generation instead of the older one. And you also talked about how we also need to save the cultural aspects of our places, our cities, our systems.
Mm-hmm.
How do you consolidate these two, for me, opposing ideas that don't have biases based on culture, but also keep the culture because that's important for our values, approaches, understanding of life, and so on? How do you solve this opposition?
Interesting question. And yes, there's a little bit of an element there on preserving the culture and also a little bit of the element there on making decisions based on different cultural backgrounds and whatnot. And I think it really depends. And when it comes to culture, it really depends on the space and the people that we are working with. For example, if I use this algorithm, and again, this is ultimately, it all comes back to the policymakers who's going to make the decision. So all of us here will have different sets of biases, judgment and whatnot. And we all need to challenge one another and say and ask ourselves these critical questions. Are we doing something that's right for the community or for the end users? And ultimately, all these examples that I've given so far, they are examples to highlight the importance of critical thinking and think about culture and whatnot. But this may not be the end solutions or the end product. And how the end product or end solutions will look like, it all depends on the conversations that we have, the policy that we put in place, as well as taking into account the voices of our community as well. So there are different factors when it comes to the ultimate output. So I'm not saying that this is going to be how it looks like. There will definitely be a lot of layers of conversations that we need to have. And this is where we need to do better at, is to have the courage to have those kind of conversations. And I appreciate you asking this question as well, because I think this is an important area we need to discuss more about. And this is probably also another missing piece in a lot of the smart city conversations today as well.
Thank you for taking the time to answer this not easy question. I acknowledge that. The other challenging question is that you talked about how equity and inclusion is a big fear for you, and that specific or certain groups could be left behind in cities. Do cities need to create the same opportunities everywhere?
What opportunities means for different cities and different communities will be very different. Most importantly here, I think, is to remember that for every cities, when I say about every cities, like places like Melbourne, Sydney, KC, etc., it's important to always remember who are the people that we are serving. In my opinion here is that there is no one-size-fits-all approach for different cities. Every city, you have different community groups, different aspirations, and also different ambitions over there. And it's important for us to create those opportunities that are very tailored for your different cities. So I came from Malaysia. In KL, Kuala Lumpur, entrepreneurship is a big thing. So creating that opportunity for entrepreneurship will be quite important. Whereas if I move to another state in Malaysia, say somewhere up north, whereby infrastructure is not quite there yet, then the opportunity over there would be on building the infrastructure for better connectivity. So all these different so-called opportunities and initiatives will be very different based on the cities and also the community that we serve. Having said that, we need to make sure that within that community itself, the people who live there have equal access to that opportunity. So for example, entrepreneurship, we need to make sure that everyone will have chance to participate in any entrepreneurship program that's available over there. And when it comes to connectivity, everyone in that area will have equal access to the internet, the Wi-Fi, etc. Different opportunities, different places, but it needs to be open to everyone.
Thank you very much for your clarification. And since we are talking about the opportunities, what are the three biggest opportunities regarding the future of cities for you?
A lot, and I probably can think more than three. I think the biggest one is the potential for innovation and collaboration, especially between the public and the private sector, and also bringing our community along that journey. In KC, which is where I work at, we have this platform called the Living Lab. And to me, this living lab is like one of the most powerful tools here to drive that innovation and collaboration. So it provides that platform for different stakeholder groups like councils, communities, research institutes, businesses, local businesses and whatnot to all come together to solve a particular challenge for the community. So what this does is we enhance that collaboration between the council and the research institutes and whatnot. We pull together our different resources. So the research institutes will have some expertise, some businesses will have specialized resources and whatnot. So we bring all these different strengths together. And we also empower the community to be part of that problem-solving process as well. We invite our community to provide feedback on some of the Living Lab projects that we have. This creates that ecosystem there for innovation and collaboration. And I hope to see a lot more of this happening. And I think the other one as well, from an opportunity perspective, is also technology. As much as I love technology, it's not always the solution to a problem. That said, I think we can leverage technology for more efficient transportation systems, sustainable energy solutions and whatnot. So it all goes back to that data and connectivity piece, making sure that we use that technology for good for our cities and whatnot. And probably the other one that stands out to me in terms of an opportunity lens is also on education as well. And that is not just like traditional education, but also educating ourselves about cities, about people around us, about the culture, the nature, etc. And also advocating for change as well. I'm personally very involved in a lot of the women in STEM kind of initiatives. So I think when it comes to opportunities for education, women in STEM, or people from different cultural background, kids, elderly, etc., we all have equal opportunities to education. And I think there is probably another opportunities that most cities can offer as a service to their citizens and community. So I guess it's all coming back to that, creating that level playing field here so that everyone can participate.
I really appreciate the idea of education being an opportunity and not just the traditional, let's sit in the school and learn something, but also your self-education and advocacy roles. Have you heard of the platform Khan Academy?
Yes, Khan Academy. I use that a lot and it's probably like my good friend since I was in high school.
Could you explain what Khan Academy is, please?
Yeah, so there are some tutorials. And back then when I was using Khan Academy, it's primarily on more complicated mathematical problem that I was struggling on how to solve. So things like algebra, vector calculus and whatnot. Back then, my use of Khan Academy is really to understand how to do those mathematical operations. I haven't used Khan Academy for a while now since I left uni, which I should. But I think that is also a platform here to tell us that education don't just happen in the classroom and we can always learn beyond what we already know. And there's always something that we don't know. There's that opportunity and exploration over there. And it's really interesting how education has changed in the last couple of years as well. Back then for me, even younger, going to school is the only way to learn new things or going to the library and whatnot. It's very physical. And when I moved into high school, it has become a little bit of that online learning, self-paced learning. And there are also courses and subjects that are beyond my actual syllabus that is always open to learning. And today we have like mobile apps and some people are also even teaching on YouTube. If you want to learn different languages, you have Duolingo, etc. I think the education landscape has changed so much that you don't really need to be there. You can pace yourself and learn what suits you at that point in time. And it's really empowering to do that.
I also asked this because Khan Academy a few months ago announced that they have Camingo, I think that's the name. So they are advancing their own platform, although it was already advanced. Currently, it's not just online education, but anyone who uses it could get an AI tutor, which would help the self-education part because, for example, it doesn't give the answers. It gives you a way towards the answer. So it explains and it helps you get to the answer. And it's just amazing to see how education is changing and that on these online platforms, people who can't go to schools can learn even without physically being in a school.
Totally. And I'm glad you brought that example up. I was watching this documentary on early childhood education and also how kids are using apps these days, like iPad and whatnot to learn. And there was this learning center in Singapore where, again, I don't remember the name here and I don't remember the app. All I remember was that they actually have an AI plug into their existing app, and they actually did a comparison before and after the AI plugin. So what they found is that before they have AI, the students, when they reach a question that they don't know, they will just like give up. Whereas after having the AI plugin, the students gave the feedback that they feel less stuck and they can at least progress with doing something. It may not be an answer to them, but it helps them to think differently. It gives them that prompt to shift their thinking a little bit. And I think this is also a good example on putting technology to good use. Of course, there are a lot of things we need to consider before we put an AI in. But if properly implemented, it can actually change the learning appetite of our future generation, which is fantastic.
And we worked a lot around this term, technology. What does technology mean to you?
If I go back to the traditional textbook approach that I remember on top of my head, there will be two layers here. One is the hardware side of things and the other one is the software side of things. So the hardware side of things would be any equipment that can help us to communicate and transfer data from different locations. To me, that is a form of technology. And the other one, when it comes to software, would be all this cloud stuff, AI stuff, algorithm, data, software, you name it, we have it. And ultimately, for me, technology can only be as smart as the people who are using it. Technology can do everything. Like, you can have the most advanced app, most advanced algorithm, etc. But if the people who are using it are not familiar on how to use it and the risk of using it, it's really back to no point. The technology is not there to serve a purpose. I'll give you an example. My parents, as an example, have this like really modern iPhone, like the latest version, and it's probably way better than mine. And of all the apps that we downloaded for them, okay, this is where another problem comes in, right? They don't even know how to download apps. So we will download the apps for them. And those are the apps that we think are relevant and applicable. But of all the, say, 10 apps that we have downloaded, they are probably going to just use 3 of them. And each time when there's like an app upgrade, my mom gets so nervous and she goes, what is this thing? Can you teach me how to use it? Things like that. So I'm a firm believer that technology can do everything. But if it's not serving, or if the people who are using it are not aware of the benefits of it or not aware of the risks, which can go sideways as well, which is also another concern of mine when my parents are using technology, I'm always very afraid that they get scammed and whatnot. The technology is actually of no use.
That is hilarious. And I think that every younger generation experiences a challenge with their older generations, that we are transitioning to a newer technology and we need to always explain what's happening with the technology to the older generation. And thank you for your personal experience. I also asked this question, what technology means to you, because technology in the dictionary sense also means practical knowledge. Mm-hmm. Knowledge mm-hmm. translated to practice. In your answer, I understood that technology is more about information technology. So not how we use a pen, how we create a desk, how we put together a computer or whatever. So you are more thinking about the information technology side of the technology.
Correct. And I feel like technology is ultimately an enabler for us to do things a little bit easier and better. We could argue that everything we have today is in some way or another a form of technology. Things like air conditioning system is a form of technology, is a form of invention. You have electronics going behind your aircon unit. You have some data that is stored in your remote control that you control your air conditioning. So it's always a form of technology and it has already been there. It's just that as days comes, we see that there's more and more advancement and things that really, when I look around this room that I'm in, everything here is in some way or another a form of technology.
So your fears were equity and inclusion, data biases, and I also put in technology use after you explained how it can go haywire. And the opportunities were the potential for innovation and collaboration, technology and education. Mm. Can you explain what innovation means to you?
There are different forms of innovation. My personal belief is that there's different forms of innovation. You can do stepwise small change that is also considered a form of innovation. And you can also do some sort of breakthrough thinking. And that is also another form of innovation. My definition here for innovation is that as long as it makes something better than where it was, that is a form of innovation. So that's the fundamental rule of it. My preference for innovation, though, is a different thing. What I really think is something that excites me in the form of innovation is really that big breakthrough thinking, because someone once told me that we don't see light bulb because of a small improvement in candle, but it really comes from the experimentation from the different materials that make the filament of the light bulb. Small little changes, not saying that they are not important, they are small changes that can make big impact, but let's not forget also those big changes that can make really big impact, having that benefit translate across multiple generations. I cannot imagine myself using a candle now to light up a room.
And this very well ties into your previous enthusiasm about NEOM, because they are doing the city completely differently as we have been doing it. What are the three biggest strengths regarding the future of cities for you?
I'll go back to my favorite, and something that I hold very closely to me is always the people. And I think I spoke about this on global human mobility and whatnot. And I think one of the potential strength here is also how easy it is for us to move from one country to another these days as compared to in the past. And I think this is where all this sharing of knowledge can be done even more effectively, bringing together all these different talents from different backgrounds, sharing that perspective. To me, actually, that's superpower for innovation over there. And of course, when it comes to another strength as well, my view here is that a city today is not just a place where we live in. There's also a lot of opportunities here for us to make our city a learning hub. So every city can always learn from one another. We can always learn from, say, Singapore, and Singapore can also have something that they can learn from us. So there's always all these different opportunities for cities to share knowledge. I think some cities also have that concept of sister cities where they pilot programs together. And I thought that's actually very good in terms of sharing knowledge. Singapore is probably one of the ones that I think we can always learn from, because they don't talk about best practice. They also talk about next practice as well, which I thought is a very interesting thing. So best practice, we are looking at something that works before, for example, something that has been done before, and because it has been done successfully and hence we copy that. Whereas next practice is about something that has no precedence, is about something that's very future focused, is something that has many unknowns and ambiguities, but yet we still take the courage to do that. So I think this is one thing that we can learn. They are probably one of the ones from my observation. Again, there may be other cities who are doing very similar things. They are very open to trying out new ideas and also experimenting. And that's just one example. The idea here is that we can always learn a thing or two from different peoples or different cities, their smart city or future city journey. To me, that's also another strength there. And we spoke about technology being a fear, a concern, and also an opportunity. But I think technology can also be a strength if we use it correctly.
So the strengths are the people and our opportunity to move around and share knowledge. The other is that cities can also share the knowledge, and we can create cities as learning hubs. And the third is technology. Really interesting for me to say that global mobility is a strength. I understand where you are coming from, that with global mobility, we can share knowledge. However, I am very curious, what do you think about just global mobility in and of itself, when people choose, consciously choose where they live based on various characteristics? So for example, Luis Natera talked about how he consciously chose to move from his hometown in Mexico to live in Amsterdam because he likes the place, he likes the mobility, and he likes the people there. But he also thinks that his skills and knowledge can help the city achieve a better future. So he can help the future of that city in specific ways. What do you think about this global mobility when people can choose where they live based on the different characteristics of that specific place they want to live in? Do you think that is useful and beneficial in and of itself without necessarily looking at the side consequences like knowledge sharing?
Knowledge sharing is probably just one platform. My view here is that different people will definitely choose different places to live based on what fits in best about their personal situation as well. Everyone will have very different experience, which I probably also touched on a little bit earlier. It also depends on at which stage of life that we are in and also the extent where we want to contribute as well. I'll again use myself as an example. I currently work for City of KC, but I live in the city of Melbourne. And for me to go to the city of KC is around 1.5 hours per trip. There's an opportunity here for me to be part of something bigger, which is to uplift the city, to make it a smarter city, and also thinking about the future of city. When it comes back to global mobility as well, there's always that learning opportunities there for people to share knowledge and also to contribute their skills and their knowledge based on the needs of their particular cities. And as we spoke about earlier, the needs of different cities probably are changing every now and then anyway. Being able to find the spot where you think you can contribute is important, but we are also not discounting the fact that there's also personal circumstances that may encourage us to move from one place to another and also different stage of life as well. Again, I'll use my parents. If you ask them to stay in a highly urbanized area now with a lot of like city heights, all these high-rise buildings and whatnot, they will probably go, no, that's not where I want to be. They want to be a little bit more remote and whatnot. And let's also not discount that all these communities who are moving from one place to another, they can also be a platform for us to test some of our assumptions as well. So when my parents were moving from different area, they also participate in different community groups. And sometimes they also get involved in some of those council and local activities. And they also share their knowledge as well. And knowledge is shared not just moving, it's shared through conversation. So like the conversations that I'm having with you right now. And again, we don't really need people to move around to share knowledge. Of course, that is an opportunity for us. Knowledge can also be shared through virtually as well, especially COVID actually helps us a lot on this, whereby we are doing things on Zoom and whatnot. And we also spoke about how people can learn new things on the internet these days. It is an opportunity and a strength, but that is not just the one picture of it.
Pearl, you have been very generous with your time, and we are getting to the end of my questions. What is your role in establishing the future of cities?
Oh, I have a lot of roles, I think. I can put on a work hat and also a personal hat over here. I'll take my current role, which is like the head of smart city innovation and improvement with the City of KC. For me here right now, my role is to make sure that our strategy meets the needs of our growing and changing community, which I probably also spoke about that a few times. And really listening to the needs of the community as well. I always believe that for most places, when it comes to smart city strategy, there's no one size fits all kind of thing. It's not like something that we can just buy off the shelf. Our smart city strategy needs to be very customized and tailored to the people that we are serving and also change based on their needs. And also always remember, and as part of my role here, is also to always encourage all my team members to think about smart city, not a destination, but rather it's a journey. So we don't wake up one day and say, yes, we are a smart city now. No, there's always a progress, continuous improvement mechanism behind that. And we take small little baby steps there to reach to where we want to be. And don't stop there. Refresh, plan, do, check, act. That's what my lecturer told me back then. For me, my role in that professional space is to make sure that the strategy is well executed and also and also there's a continuous improvement mechanism over them. I'm also doing my PhD now. And funny, you probably can relate to me on the importance there on our role here for knowledge dissemination. So we publish papers, we present in conferences, also contribute to potentially like educational programs like lecturing, preparing course materials and whatnot. And the idea here is really to help to train our next generation of leaders to think about their role when it comes to contributing to their city as well. Another role is also more on that women in STEM side of things as the Science and Technology Australia Superstar of STEM. I think advocacy is also another key part of my role here. And it's all about promoting diversity in the STEM field, especially for women of different cultural backgrounds. So I feel like it is quite important for us to make sure that their voice at the table and also contribute their talent and ideas to how we design the future of the city. We spoke about biases earlier, so I think this is going to add another interesting lens on how we can create more opportunities for those underrepresented groups as well. And I think the most important one is probably because my role as a human being as well. I think we need to be the change that we want to see here. As a human being here, it all starts with us taking that responsibility here and being an active contributor to make sure that our city is what we want our future generation to see. Either doing some courses to uplift our knowledge in that area or just making sure that we learn about recycling, how do we throw and dispose rubbish properly. Small little change like that can make a difference. And when people see what we are doing, we may encourage other people to do the same good thing like what we are doing. And I'm, of course, not a perfect human being, still learning how to be a better citizen and a better community member as well.
And our becoming better human beings and better citizens is also a journey, not just a smart city.
Totally, 100%.
Thank you so much for your time. I highly appreciate your answers and your work. That is amazing what you are doing. Do you have any closing comments or requests for the audience?
I think it all goes back to us as a human being, really encourage us to play an active role in contribute our city. So when we are a community member, if our city or councils are asking for feedback and whatnot, it would be good if we can play a role over there. And of course, uplifting our knowledge and capability in different areas, always remember that it's a journey. Continuous learning is quite important over here. So I think those are the two key things that I would like to share with the audience.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was really interesting to hear from Pearl her focus on education regarding the future of cities, not to mention her description of NEOM as an innovative place, rethinking urban planning from the ground up. Tom Bochet provided another angle on planned cities in episode 186. You can find out more about Pearl online. All the links are in the show notes. What was the most interesting part for you? What questions did arise regarding Pearl's approach to the future of cities? What have you learned from this interview? Let me know on Twitter at WTF4Cities or on the WTF4Cities.com website where the transcripts and show notes are available. You can also subscribe on the website not to miss any new episodes and leave some feedback. I hope this was an interesting interview for you as well, and thanks for tuning in.
What is the Future for Cities podcast?